Blog Talk Radio.
They will badly bruise their brows, but give them time. When we approach the commandment of Christ and Buddha, what is the dust of the threshold to us? An oyster shell without its contents. Display speed. Spilled seeds are difficult to gather. Learn to comprehend the manifestation of the teaching as a miracle in order to manifest the shield on all paths. I feel each moment that is useful to you. Our front line stands as a wall, and a smile flashes as lightning over all faces at each of your successful moves. As a gardener sees that the garden be covered with buds, uprooting the weeds, so we watch the movements of the chosen hands. Joy is each resourcefulness, because the shield is forged on both sides. Broad is my work, to everyone a place ordained. By the broadness of your vision, you will allot your own part. The manifestation of unprecedented possibilities is behind the door. Give us reason to rejoice. It is good to be in the sunshine, but the starlit sky also brings harmony to the nerves. The moon, on the contrary, is not for us. The moon's pure light affects the prana. The magnetism of the moon is great, but for repose it is not good. Often the moon evokes fatigue, like people who devour one's vital energy. The manifestation of miraculous power increases during moonlight. A pure prana, or prana rather, must respond to the attraction. Otherwise, there is no miracle, but a destruction of the vital treasure trove. While resting, it is good to laugh, for the thyroid gland is purified by laughter. To purify the glands is a primary duty. Shambhala is the indispensable site where the spiritual world unites with the material one. As a magnet, there exists the point of utmost attraction to the gates of the spiritual world opened into the mountain dwelling. Manifested height of Garish Shankar helps the magnetic current. Jacob's ladder is the symbol of our abode. Superstition can be driven out only by respecting the forces innate in man. And one must know how people are awaiting my coming. People desire forges a new rung for the ladder. And I find this interesting, and I always did, the emergence of Buddhism and Christianity. But more so the aspiration to Christhood, you know, of an individual. And what a long, hard journey it really is to even come close to that illumination. To be so enlightened as an individual, to actually be able to reach that level of illumination, that Christhood, that nirvana, it just blows the mind, you know. And we are so involved in our third dimensional world, man, you know, to try to escape it for even a moment is so difficult. Only in our dreams can we do that. Only in our sleep. It is so sad. sad because so many people are insomniacs. So many people can't sleep. You see it more and more and more today than you ever did. I went through a period in time where I had sleep deprivation. I was working a third shift. This was about, maybe 15 years ago. After a severe divorce, I fell into difficult times where my brokerage was in trouble and my the economy was taking a huge dive, and there were so many problems, the financial problems, I had to take a second job just to survive so I could support my own business during the day. And working nights is something quite different because the world is asleep at that time. And you're not, and the vibes, your entire life's cycle, biological cycle, changes. And maybe if you sleep, when you do what I was doing, you wind up sleeping 3 or 4 hours in a day, maybe. And, everything just starts to... you become so involved in the three-dimensional reality that you exist in, that everything takes on another, an added weight, if you will. It's almost like a prison. Well, the only time a person has to escape is during his sleep. And if you deprive yourself of that, then you are a complete 24-hour prisoner. So, in itself, I guess, I found myself daydreaming. during fits of industry, and fits of, during your working and what you're doing, you become quite weak, where you find yourself, you don't even realize during the day if you're dreaming or you're not dreaming. Your reality becomes so distorted that the mind needs the rest. It has to plug into that altered dimension, that fourth dimensional space that you go when you sleep. It needs rest. It can't survive 24 hours of stimulation, third dimensional stimulation. And so let me continue this. I know I digressed here in this, but I it's so true that in order to achieve a balance in life, you must have sleep, you must have food, you must have activity, you must have sex, you must have all the things that drive one, and at the same time all the things that allow you to sleep. Let me go on. This work gets a little difficult in the sense that it is so multidimensional, and its narrator is actually is coming to you from a much higher dimension, a sixth dimension, eighth dimension hierarchy, and coming down to you and speaking to you and in some way that tries to make sense to your daily routine, something you're going to hold on to. And he says, the density of matter obstructs each experiment of the spirit. This concerns men as well as the whole of nature. For access to it, matter must be melted. In the process of smelting, there is produced a specific gas which assimilates with the substance of the spirit. In man, a gas emanates from the nerve centers at each ecstasy of happiness or unhappiness. Thus, a lavatory of the spirit is obtained. Therefore, misfortune is called the visitation of God. But each somnolent existence in death of spirit. In nature, ecstasies manifest as thunderstorms, earthquakes, eruptions of volcanoes and floods. A similar lavatory of spirit begins to work. Hence, all sparks of ecstasy are blessed. Molten matter yields to improvement and provides new formula. Instead of prolonged researches, it suffices to reflect the elements in our mirrors, and then to accumulate new formula. Then remains the second part of the work, patiently and in due time to give them to people. Upon the fires of ecstasy travels our ray, seeking admittance into the heart. Where is the happiness or misfortune that has opened the entry? But contacting molten matter, one senses the pulse of earth, and the heart must withstand the gravitation. And those who will take part in his work must guard their hearts. Therefore, I say, guard the heart. All else is easy to repair. It represents matter, whereas the nerves are subservient to the spirit. At the knock of the spirit, the door of the solar plexus is open. By each stroke of matter beats upon the heart. Whosoever wishes to come in touch with the formula of matter must guard the heart. Our medicine teaches how to strengthen the heart through breathing, but about this another time. The nerve emanation is imponderable. It is odorless and invisible. Because it is of the spirit. The product of the heart is blood in all its earthly dimensions. Within it, therefore, when it is said that one must feel with the heart, this means it should be adapted to the earthly plane. The sole bridge between the spirit's understanding and the embracement of earthly plane is the white blood corpuscle. But you know what conflict attends their existence. Do not the white corpuscles, subject to the forces of earth and bearing the knowledge of spirit, seem to you like white brothers? This is why harmony is so difficult on earth. But to work there where the spirit has descended into matter, the conditions of both planes must be met. One should not estrange oneself from the earthly, yet one must abide in the spirit. For the mastery of the earthly formulae, one must possess a strong channel of the heart, because the reflex of the earthly signs carries dangerous sparks. But for earth, all must be accomplished upon the earthly plane. Therein is the chief reason for the existence of the Brotherhood here. Therefore, upon earth, one must reach us, discover us as silver ore, the best beneath the earthly crust. And I should say, he talks about the heart in book seven of this series is the heart. It's called Heart. And book 8, 9, and 10 are the fiery world. And those are probably the most, they're not the most significant, but they are the core. And that's why they're in the middle of this book. They are the heart, if you will, of the work itself, of the Agni Yoga. And it talks about how the heart rules. It is the forge, if you will, of our spirit. And it merges. heart are one, then all knowledge, all sensory perception, and all everything becomes known. At present, great understanding of the revelation of the highest teaching takes place. It is good to understand that the possession of objects should be devoid of a feeling of property ownership. It is good to possess things in order to take care of them, and even to surround them with a benevolent aura, with the thought of passing them on to others. The manifestation of a creative hand dwells in a house whose occupants are without attachment to property. And being improved, it will carry joy further. The sign of the bestowing hand will be preserved continuously, and therein lies the justification of objects. Through this understanding is solved the most difficult problem. I say this for the world because the ruination of the world arises chiefly from the attachment to non-existent property. Isn't that interesting? To inculcate this in the new people means to cure them of the fear of old age. Possession devoid of the sense of ownership will open the path to all without conventional inheritance. Who can improve shall possess. Concerns lands, forest, and water. All mechanical achievements and various types of inventions are subject to the same principle. It is easy to imagine how folk creation will begin to work, especially in the knowledge that only the spirit offers the best solution. To the earth of spirit shall be directed questions as to how best, and the sword of the spirit shall strike any evil guile. Verily, it is profitable to do better. The law is simple, as is everything of spirit. And I believe they're correct in this. I have to admit that we are just users of things until we die. And then we have no use for them any longer. So to possess things in this world, I guess it's simply our job is not to possess them or be obsessed by them, but to more or less care for them in ways that they can be passed on, the ways that they can benefit someone else when you pass on. For instance, like books. Books, if revered and for their wisdom, they are the encapsulated spirit of the author, of the writer. They are the creation of the author, and each one is special. Each one is precious. Each one is special in its own way. Some more so than others, of course. Some more valuable than others by their wisdom or by their phenomenal story or some character or some philosophy or some truth that was captured there and preserved in words or in pictures for others to benefit from, or from you to benefit from, while you own that book, while you have possession of that book, but knowing all along that you shouldn't keep it from anybody, really. So I'm not a big proponent of lending books other than through a library, because so often if you lend a book, it never comes back to you. Somebody tosses it or puts it aside or forgets about it and never bothers to bring it back. I don't know why. I do that. I've done it. Now that others do it to me, but I don't begrudge anyone for that. It's just simply a part of human nature, you know. You're going to get around to it, or God forbid you lose it or something. And these things happen. But wisdom, it's like a library, basically. You don't own anything in the library, but you're allowed to borrow it as long as you bring it back. And, so many of us have violated that privilege by bringing it back late or losing the book and never bringing it back at all. That does happen. But I don't know what else to say about that. But these are things that events have so piled up in the organisms of sensitive people are in tremor. One must ascribe the tremor of nerves to cosmic disturbances. Nothing should be exposed under a shower, but afterwards the sun is especially radiant. Monetary aims should be abolished, as help can be provided through labor or objects. There will be none without work when people will turn to the path of spirit. We intend to demonstrate this advantage of perfectionment, not for our invisible world, but for you yourselves. We summon to our path. Assemble the most unfortunate ones, the most obscure young adults, our young students, and reveal to them the gift of power to endow humanity. Advise them to write the statutes in the temple. It is long since the world has witnessed assemblages in the temple. Christ will bestow his grace upon the attaining ones. We wish to see the temple beautiful and alive, and no one shall expel those walking to light, for ruin awaits him. Miracles will be received upon the tablets of knowledge. Let each one who is illumined by spirit walk boldly into the temple. Our path leads to the transformation of earth into a palace. There are no poor. Who is unwilling to accept riches? I rejoice to see how you understand the details of my decrees. I prepare an event foreseeing all details. Act likewise, as thus it will be easier for us to meet each other. One should not scatter to the winds a part of what has been predestined. Being resourceful, one need not deviate from the path. Intense attention is important. A vigilant spirit walks ahead of understanding. My ray is ready to kindle the lightning flash of thought, and thus shall we pass between all dangers. Failure will turn into success. And I think I understand this passage more than I did the last time I read it, because I A vigilant spirit walks ahead of understanding. My ray, or my soul, if you will, is ready to kindle the lightning flash of thought. And thus shall we pass between all dangers, and failure will turn into success. And this is so true, because whenever you're in the darkest point of your life or a moment, you may pray, you may meditate, or you may just go blank and hope that some helpful thought will come to you and rise you from these depths of despair or depression or thoughts that are morose, you know, or have great weight to them. If you just allow yourself to be yourself, then this is open up that gateway to the cosmos and become submissive to that thought. Open it up. They welcome in. I welcome these thoughts each day. I welcome wisdom and compassion and understanding, knowledge. I welcome it. Welcome it. Welcome it. Every single minute of the day, whether I'm asleep or awake, I welcome these inspirational thoughts. Because only through them and only through that energy coming through us can we experience a third dimensional illumination, right? But we must allow the hierarchy to speak to us, to work through us, to aid us on our path to enlightenment. Because, let's face it, those that will help us, those are our guides, are illumined. They have seen the way. They've gone through the initiation. Right? They've passed through, and they see it. And guide us, basically, through the spirit, to the origins of nature, the origins of God, the origins of ourselves. Where do we begin? And where do we end? And the end is infinite. The ending time, there is no end time. It's completely infinite. Right? You know, because what it does is it starts new every second, every nanosecond. That we look ahead, look to the future, so does our future begin. But as soon as we stop looking to the future and have our eyes fixed backwards, then we stop to, we no longer live within the present. And this is what happens to so many people. They do not foresee the present. They do not have enough vision or hope for the future to see the future. I, on the other hand, I've worked very diligently for many, many years to get a glimpse of that other world, to get a glimpse of God, get a glimpse of His entourage, if you will, of seraphim, cherubim, and wondering what I can do. Time to grow. They all take time to be created. other books to be a sheer nothing. You know, there are books that will never, that have nothing to them. You know, no significant thought other than some, you know, well-spun story about somebody or some situation that becomes a bestseller. But it's only a bestseller because it allows people not to think, to be either better informed or to be a complete escapist and to do away completely with the Ron Paul and the Iowa caucus results and the New Hampshire results and anything else political. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. What's critical, to operating in this world is to be able to merge the spirit and the physical together into some form of industry, whether it be study or whether it be physical work or whether it be clerical work or you know, priesthood. It's irrelevant, basically, where the instrument came from. But it's more relevant to find out how it will be played and how that student will play their instrument. One will play it totally different than another. The strumming, if they have a guitar, the strumming is different. If they have a flute, their flute is different. Their favorite songs are different. Their reactions to things are different. Their solidarity with other band members, their, you know, or co-writers of their music. This is all part of creating the illusion of anger, the illusion of safety, the illusion of even happiness, all right, is all an illusion that is changed within seconds. So pay no heed to those. However, the consistent voice is the one that does get listened to and eventually brings new voices forward. And you know that there's something there that compels a person to a true voice. Don't ask me what it is exactly, but I'm compelled to them. I'm compelled, as most people are. And, you know, for that reason, we're here tonight. I'll continue with the reading. Maitreya sends courage. Maitreya will accept the gift. Maitreya feels its love. Maitreya sends blessings upon the joyous labor. Maitreya bestows labor upon earth and in the same, in the name of miracle. Walk joyfully. It is a joy to me to lead the smiling ones, discerning the light, the teaching of light in each manifestation. Resourcefulness is a quality of my pupils. I enjoin you to behold a miracle needed to pupils. You will know how to reach the hearts of men. As the arm can move only from the shoulder, so does the consciousness move from the brain. And one must donate the brain. Then the consciousness is projected forward as from a cannon. The teaching flies upon the wings of events. Say, I may wait today, because though tomorrow shall follow even without me, meanwhile I can strengthen myself. How can one advise when and what rubbish should be sold to the market? We shall not display ourselves when we put on new garments. Let them believe there is nothing to put on. Even the keys of the trunks must not rattle, and we shall draw the curtains of windows. The law of transition into the spirit world is not complex. One condition may not be likened to the other, And as the dusk of the volcano, so countless are the spirits who return to the spiritual world. Of course, matter is a condition of spirit, but blood differs so greatly from its equivalent in the spirit, which is nurtured by prana, that the boundaries are broken throughout all worlds. It is with difficulty that the spirit realizes its release from matter. The spirit attached to earth closed itself in the astral body, which perhaps for him, illusions of earth are in the heart of craving and remorse. But the spirit which speaks out in upward striving only can avoid the astral plane, because the astral body is but superfluous rubbish. The less litter, the purer the consciousness. On earth, it is difficult to conceive of forsaking matter without despising it, abandoning it, being it for a new form or formation. But you have the best example in the giving away of any objects. The best donor will devise the best gift. Therefore, the matter, which has garbed a lofty spirit, affords the greater usefulness, because nothing is wasted. Of course, a conscious communion is accessible to lofty spirits of the appeal, if the appeal is sufficiently freed from the question of matter and blood. And a spirit nurtured by prana does not assimilate blood. Therefore, one may divide the world on the basis of blood. No other demarcation exists. The seed of the spirit commonly carries life on. The balloon of nerve emanations carries the spirit into the heart, rather the height of the spirit as determined. Therefore, to speak of the immorality as a pure scientific fact is both profoundly correct . Spirit continuously carries life on. The balloon of nerve emanations carries the spirit into the heights of the spirit as determined. Therefore, to speak of immortality as of a purely scientific fact is profoundly correct. Upon the case casting away of the matter, the final thought is like an arrow. This man determined the intention of the flight. To speak of immortality as a purely scientific fact is profoundly correct. And upon the casting away of matter, the final thought is like an arrow. This moment determines the direction of the flight. The rest is added according to the aspiration. Let us show how to aspire. Let us construct a rainbow conjoining the streets. Steps of the spirit ascent. Let us speak of death. Death is no more than the shearing of the hair, for in the same way is matter cast off. The question of guides is answered by the familiar law of attraction and repulsion. Principle of requirement and assistance is a powerful one in the special world, spiritual world. Therefore, every appeal of an embodied spirit evokes a response. It depends upon who asks. One can attract and keep near oneself lofty forces. Also, the lowest spirits can be fastened about oneself. One receives that one's wishes, and when that men understand the usefulness of pure beauty, they will receive riches. I kind of phased out here. I'm sorry for the gap. I was kind of reading ahead, and let us speak of death. The spirit is a light of the beauty of the stars. A few stars blend with light. More of them are in astral bodies. Better to glow as a star, retaining knowledge and the possibility of returning to the planets to help. One may choose a better destiny. Are the possibilities of the giving one not evident? One may strive upwards toward light, seeking to render assistance. Then there is no parting. If those who remain we consider the departed as having been light, been sent to light and for enlightenment, then the communion would be more profound or more sound. The loftier the spirit, the more he beholds. It depends upon the development of the good spirit. A lofty spirit feels whither to strive. It flies as an arrow, but a dark one hovers behind stove. Therefore, precious is the gold desire to seek, because he who seeks finds. And if the desire of the spirits are lofty, it can discover lofty forms, and in creating them, it can contribute to perfectionment. The law of the saturation of space is similar to that of cementation. Legends, prophecies, and manifold signs have the major significance, not for the separate individual, but for the cementing of space. Our communions reveal the book of the growth of the spirit's understanding, not by the way of miracles, but by that of daily routine. Do we work? I vouch that even from spawn one can learn, and each ovum of the sperm gives a complete orgasm. Organism. I misread that. And so each ovum of the spawn bears a complete organism. Thus, a many huge sack of thought imbues space. A cloud is no miracle. Meanness is not achievement. Ruination is not cleverness, but the awakened spirit grasps understanding immediately. Therefore, the brotherhood has the abnegated the manifestation of miracles. Science can accompany even only a banner, even only its banners. One should discard miracles as a means of persuasion, because miracles have never convinced. Some speak of the personal communion, but the air is for all, although many do not wish to understand its use, precisely its use. New strivings may be born over the grave of old prejudices. One more conquest. I've read only I'm kind of fading in and out of this work, as I'm probably fading in and out of consciousness here to some degree. These kind of works affect me in a weird way. And I can't really understand why, but there are certain texts that I'll read that take me to a different dimension. Somehow, the words or the structure of the sentences, the meanings, are so deep and so multi-layered that they almost cause a division within my own concentration into a fractal, if you will, of consciousness, where at one moment I can be reading along and then some word or some phrase just takes me into another dimension, or opens up another realm of thought which can't be related to in the same way, and it turns into babble, it turns into incoherent incoherent reality, you know. Just like now, we struggle so hard to try to encapsulate our thoughts and our feelings in this singular dimension that we overlook that what we are is multiple layers upon layers upon layers of existence, of spiritual as well as physical merging of the spirit and the physical, so that we are no longer able to comprehend things in the same way as one who looks at his hand, right, and sees five fingers and knuckles and bone and skin. Well, we look at a hand as the most important element of our existence. It provides us with tools, it provides us with the ability to write, it binds us with so many integrated parts of our mind that allow it to express, allow it to shoot pictures or film or create music or create some fascinating book or record some historical moment. These are the miracles that we contend with our own bodies. But imagine, if you can just imagine, the strength and the power beyond our physical manifestation, right? Think of the power that created us. Think of the powers that allow us to walk and talk and communicate. Think of the power that allows us to be here. It's just beyond any rational thinking other than one thought. That thought is that God exists, we are his creation, and for that, we all have a link to immortality, and we all are linked to infinity, right? Because we are endless. We are 24/7. We are forever hooked and thinking about these things, right? Yeah. But we make life easier, less painful, less traumatic, you know, for ourselves or family members or friends. We don't know. But whoever discovers that uniqueness in themselves and convey that through radio or through writing or through a website or some other means, television, we can portray and display our findings and to see the reaction of them to our listeners, and or in a case of a playwright, see the reactions of his play coming out through his own imagination. I mean, created this thing which it gravitates and develops, an entire different feel from a furnitureless garret. Okay. Writing during the day to preserve your candle at night, or a multi-trillion-dollar industry where you have all of these things are created for you, provided you have enough money to buy them, or there's enough charity or generosity that you can share things with people. But it's this knowledge that we have deep within us, deep within our heart, that we're always striving, because it provides us to always strive until we no longer can hear the inner voice. We can no longer hear the heart. We can no longer hear the pain of others or the joy of others. But regardless, our thoughts are about you. They're sending you the teaching and how to walk upon this steep rock, transforming it into a wondrous valley. Humanity feels that the solution is not to be found by the sword. The last possibility set in the indication of the gates. Success is only a sign of the current direction. Success is but, the understanding of the moment. And the teaching is but the lifting of the curtain of the theater. And how wonderful it is to be an actor in the world's mystery. Walk in joy. The unbroken chain has great value. And may my hand sends rays from the mountains. We shall begin the new era without delay. I teach not to dream, but to hearken to the flow of events. I find that to be quite fascinating, I think I'm going to end it here. We're out of time now. We're on record, but I'd like to end it now on that note. And I wish you all a pleasant evening. And please join us tomorrow night when we have George Dixon with us right here. And